But I think I'm sympathetic to like your stance. I'm into networks, but and modeling the mind and communities that way. But like, so help. Here's an alternate arc, like an arc, like an alternate genealogy. Like, so for example, like for me, when I see Node, like in math, it's synonymous with Vertex, right? So it's like, and graph theory comes first, right? Like the first of all of this is like the graph theory stuff, where you know. Like there are points and there are lines, like edges, lines between them, and we use that to model the world. And so, like, so we have like math, and we're using math to like model and control the world. And I think that in like, I think the Gestalt, like as far as I know, you might want to look into it. Maybe have like the Gestalt psychoanalysts are the people who actually, like in the '30s, are the first people to put like people as dots as nodes, and then like the lines between them as relationships, and so like I can imagine this path where it's like mathematics. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to like understand how our behavior is actually a product of the configuration of people around us, which is kind of, you know, like so you can imagine that like then if you're hitting like operational research and you want to like control social behavior and you're like, well, what we want is some math. And some models, you could turn to like the work of the Gestalt theorists, and then you're like, great, how do we operationalize this and use it to control people? And I don't think it is like associative and it's in community, but I don't know if it's like collaborative exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think the interesting aspect of that is. You know, how can you necessarily control what arises, you know, out of the relationships that people undertake? I mean, I think, you know, that's behaviorism to a degree, right?
No, but this is Gestalt psychotherapy where they're like, I'm trying to change your behavior and your by understanding you in your context. So the goal, I mean, maybe they can't do it, but yeah, that's a goal.
This genealogy also intersects with the genealogy John gave us because there's a lot of talk about Gestalt psychology and psychotherapy at the Mason conferences.
It's a problematic encounter. Like it's a weird, like they try and bring Gestalt psychology in, like around the third Mason conference, and it's actually one of the major splits.
Is that Kubler?
Yeah. So, like, there's people who are brought in to present Gestalt psychology because they're like, this is perfect, this is exactly what we need, and then people are not quite receptive to it, and then it's like, so it's, there's a really, really interesting history there.
Why were they not receptive to it?
There's all sorts of biases, like, all over the Macy conferences that, like, people get rejected, people feel that they're not welcome, people feel that they're not speaking the same language, you know, a lot of people who, like, so, like, they why they don't like the Gestalt psychology stuff.
You can't, they thought it was,
yeah, I don't remember.
Wasn't it, they thought it wasn't scientific enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it wasn't psychology.
Yeah.
In like, a kind of psychophysics, like, cognitive science way, right?
There's no numbers, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of bias that way.
Because psychoanalysis is, well, maybe overstating it, but that like any kind of Jungian, Gestaltian, Freudian wing of things gets killed by the cognitive science wing of things. And I think the Macy stuff is on the cognitive science.
I have a question related to like all of these ideas about or issues with psychoanalysis, because I mean I don't really know much about the Gestalt psychoanalysts, but I kept thinking, I mean, from your very first example that you used to talk about a node in wood versus the way you were describing nodes as points, right? There's two different, like, topological ideas there. And Lacan talks about the subject as a knot, right? And talks about it in a way that specifically has the social dimension of language and the way that language is structured like the unconscious, right? So you have this sort of exchanges, you know, along which signification runs. The subject has a sort of personal relationship to that that's, you know, comes out of the way that the subject knots the three different spaces together. But then later on, Lacan gets really interested in these three-dimensional topological models,
mm-hmm.
like a torus or folds, the Mobius strip. And so I guess I was wondering about, if you had thought about Lacan, but also just, you know, sort of other, like, topological models for understanding how to think about a node,
mm-hmm.
and the, like, ways that the points, you know, within a node could relate,
mm-hmm.
right? So that, I guess that's one question. And the other question I had was, where are you thinking about, like, is an idea something that's located in a node?
Okay, that's...
Or is an idea... Yeah. Because then you get into a sort of question of scale almost,
yes.
right? And
yeah.
sort of like, well, you know, like, how could we sort of localize an idea?
Yeah.
You know, in that. It's kind of like I said, two different questions, but they're related.
Well, the Lacan questions are actually really interesting because that's something I just came back to recently.
Yeah.
While I've been starting to think about this. And what I think is really interesting, actually, with, his writing on cybernetics, you know, Lacan takes up cybernetics, and this idea of the knot is, the degree to which all of the post 68, all post-structuralism in some ways influenced by this. And I'm actually very curious as to looking at how he begins his original formulations of this idea of the knot. It's something I've just sort of turned to recently. But I think that's a very interesting, the relationship between that model of the subject and these other models of the subject. I don't quite know what their relationship is yet. But your other question about the different topological models, I think, is really interesting, because one of the things that this particular idea, this kind of trope, you know, X is like a node in a network, what it does is it's a very flat topography,
mm-hmm.
right? And the idea of multiple dimensionality doesn't really occur. It's almost always formulated as a kind of flat point-to-point relay system.
Yeah.
And
a geometry, or
yeah.
a Cartesian geometry.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And the idea that an individual node is an individual idea is something that... excuse me. That begins, I think, you know, with very early neuroscience. With Freud, I think the idea is that an individual node is an individual idea. And the way that he talks about it is that, there are sense impressions that you get during the day, right? So I'm walking down the street and I see the Botanic Monograph in a shop window. And that sense impression is stored as one discrete unit. And that, then his extrapolation is then that corresponds to one discrete neuron. But in fact, that's not really how it works. Contemporary neuroscience, that's kind of what's called the grandmother theory model. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. But what's interesting to me is that even at the point at which neuroscience was beginning to abandon that idea of one discrete structural unit, or functional unit corresponding to one discrete idea, even at the same time that neuroscience is abandoning that, information technology is continuing with that idea through Vannevar Bush and then some of the later developments. One of the things that was interesting to me about the graph database stuff that I was working on was that there, you know, each node is conceived of as a discrete unit, a discrete bit of information. And what makes the database powerful is its ability to reconfigure the relationships between all these discrete bits. So it's interesting that the information technology has gone off on one line of thinking about what the relationship is between discrete units and their relationships. And neuroscience has gone on a completely different line. But the information technology often will refer back to the brain as being its model for what it's trying to replicate, even though the brain, you know, the structure of the brain has nothing to do with it at this
yeah.
point.
well, the brain too is all folded.
Those folds and things. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that.
It just seems like it's a rich area to use, right?
About.
So just a question about the node. So when you say node, do you mean, is that kind of a, do you mean a node that includes the links, or are you deliberately sort of stressing the node in contrast to the edge?
I would say that,
just because the reason why I ask is that I mean, that was fascinating what you said about how almost like the year 1900 is a sort of like node moment, but I think that if, you know, if anything, the last 10 or 20 years has been kind of like the triumph of the edge. You know? I mean, like Google makes money off of the edges, not nodes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like clustering algorithms are about edges.
Right, right.
So why nodes and not edges?
Well, because in these kind of early theorizations, that's what's valorized, right? The node is what's really important, because the node is where you have the information contained. And you're right, you know, now that we're coming 120 years later, we're realizing the value really is in the associations, not necessarily what that bit is. So that's a very significant shift.
Or maybe there was just, maybe there was a kind of, you know, technologization of the edge.
Oh yeah.
In a way that maybe wasn't.
Well, and I think that's a good point to make, because I think that's where the mimics is sort of like, even as a thought experiment, is the most important intervention, because that's the point at which you begin to see the theorizing of the significance of the connection, not the item itself. In 1900, I think everyone is just so fascinated with these little discrete objects, these little cells that they can observe, and they think everything must be contained in that. And interestingly, when you look at the attempts to theorize what's happening between those nodes, there's all kinds of random ideas, but no one cares so much about that as they do that little node, that little individual unit.
And then my other question is about emergence. Can you just say more about that? Because I mean, ever since, you know, this word first came into popular, it's like makes my skin crawl. I never ever bought it, but people really love this concept. And I mean, I thought what you said about the shift from like an equilibrium model to an emergence model is super interesting. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Can you just say more about emergence?
Well,
I just always thought like this is a way. This is like snake oil, you know, like we have this network and then crazy stuff happens, we don't know what it is, you know, it's this like mystical thing, and then like some special thing emerges, and it's usually got a dollar sign on it.
Absolutely. Emergence, well, I mean, that to me is an interesting point to make, because if you look at like the snake oil business books now, like Wikinomics and things like that, they're all about emergence. Right, everything's about emergence, although no one really knows what it is or how it happens. I think that in the later kind of cybernetic hypotheses of people like friends Umberto Maturana and Francisco Varela, they're very interested in what happens when these nodes come into interaction with each other. And here we can talk about nodes as being individual subjects, right? So the idea is that there's no way to predict what necessarily the outcome of the relationship between these two subjects will be. And the more subjects we get together in a space, the more random, you know, the emergent behaviors between them will be. So I think it seems to be sort of related to what you were talking about with, you know, what happens when forms of life get together, right? Hopefully what happens is, you know, kind of intensification of things, or an intensification of experience. For Varela, who, you know, turns to Buddhism later as a result of his interest in cybernetics, he's very interested in this idea of what he calls codependent arising. So two things are brought into contact with each other, two systems are brought into contact with each other. They will interact upon each other in a way that is influential but not necessarily determinant. And so that's where I think this idea of emergence comes from, that you can bring individual systems together, and they won't necessarily aim towards consensus, but their interaction will cause changes within each individual system that are unpredictable.
Yeah, I mean, there's the unpredictable part, but there's also this assumption that it's the sum is greater than the whole, the emergent whole
mm-hmm.
is greater than the sum of the parts. So there's it's explicitly, I think, articulated in kind of like valorization
mm-hmm.
language,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that actually there'll be this kind of beatitude of the system, such that money, you know, there
yeah.
it's about monetary extraction, you know. So like graph theory in the way that it's deployed by Google
mm-hmm.
is a kind of emergence model,
yes.
right? Like emergent value. We can put our finger on emergent value, right? Like quantity equals quality. That's
mm-hmm.
the Google model, right? Like if you get enough data, you can't do it with a little bit, but if you get enough, if you get massive amounts of data, you can extract qualitative stuff from quantitative sources.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I think that it's that side of the emergent discourse that I'm a little skeptical
mm-hmm.
of, because I think actually, you know, Tikkun. I don't think Tikkun would say that, you know, you get people together and you have emergence. I think they would say you get people together and you have civil war.
Mm-hmm.
And like civil
yeah.
war and emergence are not the same thing.
Well, that's what I was wondering. That's why I asked that question. Though. What's the outcome of civil
yeah,
war?
Yeah.
Is it?
It's static. It's friction.
Mm-hmm.
It's dialogue. You know, it's sometimes it's fighting. You know, it's screaming sometimes. You know?
But isn't that emergent?
Yeah.
Well,
it sounds
no,
like
I don't think that's fair though. But, I mean, emergence has this kind of quasi religious. You know, like the fireflies all start blinking at the same time. You know,
and
that's how it's talked about.
But don't
right?
yeah? But doesn't the, so does Agamben and Tikkun's whole like ontological background and Duns Scotus and the idea of a whateverness, like that's all a beatitudinal way of looking at the world too. And I mean, I understand where you're talking about emergence and like okay, it's sort of like this way that Google has figured out a way of like you know. Extracting surplus value
yeah.
from the genesis of
yeah.
the idea,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But that seems also
what
like
what I object to, though, is that I mean, what I object to is that it gets you know, like people had to build web pages. You know, I mean, Google is actually making money off of labor,
yeah,
which is what people made money off of always, right? So to say that Google's making money off of like a mystical thing that happens in a network. No, they're making money off of like micro labor that we all do. That's unpaid.
Yeah, when I say genesis
so,
of the idea, I don't mean it in a mystical
yeah.
sense so much as like I mean it's open for the extraction of surplus value as you know anything else is right. I mean, according to like the cybernetic hypothesis.
Yeah. I mean, maybe what's interesting is that this kind of like group behavior or something I think has been. Subjected to extraction surplus value
yeah.
relatively recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think
yeah.
that's the big revolution that they're talking
yeah.
about.
In this distinction, do we want to relate the idea of emergence to positive feedback? I mean, is part of emergence that you have all of these interactions that are going on and the outcome of it grows in some way? Where, as opposed to, it sounds like what Tikkun's saying is, you have all of these interactions that are going on and they keep going on and going on and going on, and they remain interesting, but they don't change over time, so it's self-regulating, it's negative feedback. I'm not sure if that distinction gets at both sides, but I think it's a sort of approximation of it.
I mean, there's like three modes of conceptualizing, or three modes historically of conceptualizing self-organization, right? And one is the cybernetic one, which I'm gonna talk a little bit about in a little presentation, which maybe I can talk about later. The second one is a biological one that's drawn from kind of a systems theoretic biological perspective and sort of autocatalytic networks. And then the third one is the thermodynamic one of the system far from equilibrium, right? And the idea of the bifurcation point, the idea of the kind of like a thermodynamics that's not entropic. And that's coming out of Prigogine and Stengers. And that's actually the one that they explicitly cite, right? So like even though they're not anti-entirely scientific metaphor for describing this, right? And they talk about the force they, this is somewhere in around like page 61, 62 or so, the force that we call ecstatic politics does not come from any substantial outsideness, but from the discrepancy, the small variation, the whirling motion that moving outward, starting from the interior of the system, push it locally to its breaking point, let's pull it up in the intensities that still pass between the various lifestyles, forms of life, right? And basically, like, the role that they talk about, they actually even use the, like, you know, the chaos theory word attractors here, right? So they are talking about a kind of scientific self-organizing model as a metaphor for thinking about the way in which forms of life can be composed. It's just they're choosing one that's not coming out of a sort of cybernetic model of regulation. And that to me is kind of, I kind of wonder about that a little, and that's kind of maybe one of the things we can go into. We should take like a little short break, like another hour and a half or so, and then come back in, and I want to just sort of go through some of the sort of self-organizations theories that come out of cybernetics itself, and sort of reformulating the relationship to noise beyond regulation that I think will kind of help us with this. So people want to take like a 5-10 minute break and then come back in? Sure. I also have a movie of a crazy cybernetician. So.